Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about sodium Na. I'm having a general chat slash rant about different aspects of the periodic table in slightly a different form. Last time I went through antinomy, SB, the monk killer, anti-monk, comes from the French of anti-monk, I included that there, and went through things like yttrium and ytterbium, and then went through the great R chase across the periodic table. When I looked at it again, I realised that I forgot a critical element. I did, this is just to get my memory back on it, rubidium, rhenium, Re, ruthenium, Ru, radium, Ra, radium, I should keep on forgetting that, and rhodium, which is Rh. But I did actually forget a really important R element. It's Rn, radon. How could you possibly forget that? I just went, oh, how could you do it? And it just means that trying to get that clear in your head, it means that when you summon up an element in the numbers, letters, and you get it, should it be Re, Rh, or whatever it is, Rn, Ra, or Ru, you have the other ones arrayed in your head, so your head's not going around the periodic table. You put it all together. And as we've said, there's sort of K for potassium. Like, I know where potassium, the word potassium, comes from. Where K comes from, I'll have to really get that into my head. What I want to do is cover nitrogen and sodium. For some people, reason for sodium, people go for the Latin, but it's really got an Egyptian root, and nitrogen's got a sort of a bit of a funny, confused root. So we're just going to go off and actually talk about a crazy word. So nitrogen's got a crazy origin. It's also a slightly crazy origin. Where it involves sort of some sort of mistake, sort of people's heads scratching how that word actually came across. Because nitrogen and sodium actually come from, or Na, natrium or natron, comes from the same region, and somehow it sort of got across, and nitrogen being a gas and a property came in rather late. I think they discovered oxygen and hydrogen first before they isolated nitrogen and what's going on. And there's a lot of generalized confusion here, and there's a lot of me coming in to try and understand it. Now, what happens is that I suppose I come into this area fresh. I come into a lot of problems fresh, and I suppose like an analyst, sort of, everything is up for grabs. So when I'm looking at, say, the origins of the academic basis of a curriculum and a syllabus, I sort of see if I can work out what the word curriculum means. Now, there is relevance here, because I think you'll be stunned by this. And curriculum means circular path or a route that you take in a race, which sort of makes sense. And then the word syllabus, everyone sort of knows what syllabus is, but the origin of it, that suddenly the word syllabus burst into language, not from an ancient root, but it suddenly landed as if from outer space in the 13th century. And there is a rhyme to what I'm trying to say here, because it's got a similar origin as sort of an erroneous origin as to the way that nitrogen has got its erroneous origin, sort of, but much more clear, because it's been tracked down to a single manuscript, which a monk from Antinomy, the monk killer, this monk, had a spelling mistake. He was translating a Greek document, sort of like your Xerox room, let's take it to the copy room, and the copy room will be a little room up in an abbey with someone working away. And I'm just going to draw your attention to the candle that they're using, and the fact that the candle will be producing soot, and I just to alert you to this, and there will be a reason that I'll tell you this later. So you can imagine this sooty, dusty room, hard light, trying to actually write things up, and this monk who, you know, is probably has got toxin in his head, has actually written the incorrect word, and instead of writing table contents and the contents, he's written the word syllabus. And what happens is that these people have got these books, and remember, you're in the scholastic point of view, and that people don't, in scholasticism, it's, you know, if the text is marked sacred, that's correct, and if the text is marked not sacred, it's incorrect. Then out of the correct text, if two things are contradictory, that points to a lapse in thinking or some sign of God. You know, that's how God communicates us through these texts. That's scholastic thinking, and it's well worth reading into scholastic thinking, because it's certain basis, it's more correct, it's more thorough, it goes through things, it leads in different ways, it's sort of two texts collide, and the minds go completely around in circles trying to explain it, and you get some silly explanations, but at least the silly explanations lead on to other explanations. So I'm a bit of a fan of scholastic, St. Thomas Aquinas and all that type of stuff. But what happened is that you've got scholars, and they began to actually identify this spelling mistake, syllabus, and actually identify its origin. Which, of course, it didn't have an origin, it was just a spelling mistake. And people began to argue about it, and the word syllabus, which we have to stick to, is actually a 13th century spelling mistake come across with a whole lot of academic puff. You know, so the actual origin of the word syllabus has no origin. It's something which has been invented, and it's more of a testament to human race being subject to this academic debate. So I find that really interesting. So let's go back to so if you can hold that in your mind, the dirt from the candles, and also the fact that you can have these mistakes. Now, in ancient Egypt, next to the Nile, is the Natron, the valley, Natron Valley. And so it's N-A-T-R-O-N, and the Natron, the N-A, is the Natron, is going to eventually be the N-A of sodium. There you go. So it goes through, and so this valley had various salts going into it as the Nile contracted, as Egypt dried. And what was once a fertile region became a desert region, a desolate region. And it's a very spiritual region, because you go out to the desert to commune with God, wilderness and stuff like that. Yeah, and you can imagine a lot of things. And there's various towns. There's Nitra town in there. So you can see sort of how this is going to wind up. And this meant that it was large quantities of sodium carbonate, Na2CO3. The CO3 is a polyatomic iron, carbon, and three oxygens, and it's got an overall negative charge due to the electron affinity of the various elements involved, i.e. the electrons don't sit on the outside like they're on a charged sphere, they actually sit within the molecule. That's the preserve quantum physics. But sodium carbonate is an excellent softener, water softener, ideal for soaps and disinfectant. So it had origins there. And this Natron actually began to move through in history in Rome as your soap. Get your Egyptian soap. And it was used in the mummification, and uses the sodium carbonate as a soap and stuff like that. Importantly, the sodium carbonate was added to castor oil to make the flames of the Egyptians who were going deep underground to paint hieroglyphics and decorate tombs. You needed a lot of light, but if you had these big smoking lamps, what would happen is you'd just go inside there, you'd decorate your tomb, and by the end of it, it would be all blacked. So I don't know if you've ever seen the black from poor combustion. So it changes the combustion characteristics. So there's all these chemicals going in there, and it's a real sort of chemical which allowed Egyptian writing to shine through the ages. And so as you followed it through the intermedieval Europe, people were asking for the natron and the sodium carbonate eventually yielded many years later the element sodium, and that's where the Na came from. And you can question it, whether I've got the correct statement. Bear in mind, this is just a voice out there on the internet, another podcast coming along. So how did nitrogen came along? Well, the gin comes from the French. So the French had this sort of peak around the French Revolution or pre-French Revolution, where they were just chemical kings. And they were chemical kings a little bit before, on the crossover from the ancient world, which believed that flame was leaving an object. So the flame in a piece of wood made the wood big, and then when the flame came out of the wood was left as ash. It was a phlogiston, and the wood behind is a calyx, C-A-L-X. So they had a pretty confusion stuff, but coming through it, you had little bits of germs of ideas coming through with nitrogen, and the gin gives birth to nitre. And this is where it's a little bit confusing. And I don't have the full chemistry, because apparently they need to make a lot of sodium carbonate to actually get the salts to produce the potassium nitrate, which made gunpowder. And the actual stories of how gunpowder came to Europe at the hands of Islamic invaders and Mongol invaders is just quite sickening. It's one of the more sickening things to see how the knights were just blown away by people with guns. It was just an amazing story that people don't know. So the nitrates came along, and so this was a general confusion between natron and nitra, and so the nitre actually refers to sodium carbonate. It's got nothing to do with nitrogen, but it was associated with the production of your nitrated salts, which went into gunpowder. So this is one of the things I want to do, is check out exactly how, because the people were fiddling around trying to get sodium carbonate different ways, and we know that, I just know that from chasing up the history of iodine, that people were getting sodium carbonate out of seaweed, and when they added too much sulfuric acid to the seaweed, burnt seaweed, they got iodine crystals. So that I know a bit about that. The actual complexity way that they actually got potassium nitrate to make the one of the components of gunpowder is there, but so it's the origin. So nitrogen is the origin of nitre. It's nitre birth. Nitrogen is nitrogen birth. Somehow that's got used somehow in the history books with sodium carbonate. So nitrogen's not involved in that there. And so that's one of the, I suppose, mysteries. Bits of the periodic table, if you had it as a sort of three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle piece which went back. These are just two pieces that the manufacturers haven't got quite right, and I want to get in and understand. And so sodium carbonate is definitely used in ancient Gunpowder manufacturing, of course, Europe was going through its convulsions of Napoleonic Wars up to this, so it was all happening. So it's NA and N, the origin for it. And when you look at it, nitrogen is a very curious thing. It's made not in a star cycle. Well, this CNO cycle sort of is made as a trace element in the process between making carbon and oxygen. I don't think you get a shell of nitrogen. It's like it's not a significantly made thing, but it's in supernova. The carbon gets nitrated, sufficient neutron capture. So nitrogen is made by that path. It's something I really want to study. It's got an odd number of nucleons. It's got an odd number of not nucleons, but an odd number of protons. So it's sufficiently rare. It's a really fascinating molecule to or atom to look at. And so its name is sort of shrouded in a bit of mystery. As I read more, if I update, I'll say if I find out more, I'll definitely tell you. Similar to where there was an R one. I was in the process of chasing R's across the periodic table and forgot about radon. But then you want to actually say that besides the first period, N has a showing in every period. So there's seven periods of the periodic table, and really it gives up at the ghost at the end of the sixth, and it's pretty sparse after that. So I'm going to have a go at naming the N's in periods. So period one is nitrogen, period two is sodium, period. Well, I'm wrong. Period two is sodium, there's nothing in period one. Period three is. So I'll start again. Period two is nitrogen, period three is sodium, period four, which is the first row, is nickel, that's an easy one. Period five is niobium. NO, I think it is. Niobium, which is underneath vanadium, under V. Period, that's three, four. Oh, there's neon in there. So I wonder if I got that right. Neon's in there. Then there's neodymium, and there's also Neptunium, MP. So I haven't, you can see that my memory's just not working completely as well as I'd like to. But that's the N letter through the periodic table. So this is, I'm just really throwing everything in the kitchen sink at this periodic table, memorizing it in sequence, memorizing it in columns, memorizing it across, and memorizing it in different letters as you go through. So hopefully I'll get there. And as we get there, we look into the different naming. So, if you think of sodium, you think of Egyptian mummies that they mummified with the sodium carbonate, and it's the natron region. You can look this up. It's a good thing to look at. And there's sort of a lot of confusion. Well, there's this area around the time where, at the end of alchemy, where people were beginning to look at the affinity of elements and began to actually phlogiston and the symbols of elements. There's that area just before chemistry, which a lot of the names come through that we use here. So nitrogen means birthing of nitrogen. Oxygen. Oxy means acid, it means the birth of acid. Sort of a bit of a crazy theory from Lavoisier, yeah, it's Lavoisier, who is the name, a priestly identified oxygen. Lavoisier named oxygen and hydrogen. Hydrogen means the gas of water, hydro, whereas helium is the gas of the sun. So I hope this has been useful, and it's something pretty epic. That's the NA Y takes you to this little island in Stockholm, and NA takes you into the Egyptian desert, and N takes you back to these mad or lovely French people who were building lots of gunpowder to market the French Empire all over Europe. But its origin is not that mythical origin. It's sort of confusing as it's gone through. And it's not that there's one person, like the syllabus person, who's made one mistake, and that person can go down in history as one of my you know, idols. You know, someone, the dyslexic monk who misspelt and gave us the word idea of syllabus has launched thousands of careers and terminated lots of careers as people have deviated from the syllabus. And I'm sure that people have, when they realise they've taught the wrong syllabus, and you know, the shame of doing it is there. So, yeah, I just really want to actually understand how sodium carbonate goes in the making of gunpowder. One of the fascinating things is that they've got to get nitrates. That's NO3. You've got to get sodium nitrate. How do you do it? Now, the idea is that when you eat food, you extract energy from it. So, so famously, sodium nitrate is extracted from rotten hay. There's all these things. French urine goes into it to get the nitrogen there. There's, they used to collect all the urine for it, and a lot of poo in it. And I'm just beginning to see some of the things. One of the things is that it can't be washed, because sodium nitrate is, potassium nitrate is highly soluble. So if you wash it out, so it's from inside dry caves, but also from feces. So how does that work? Because it's such a big thing to fix nitrogen. So nitrogen is, you break the nitrogen over and fix some oxygen. That's a huge amount of energy. How does that happen? So I've got a little bit of a clue in that the poo has to go white. It has to have a bacterial action in it, where the bacteria starts to munch the nutrients in the poo, and part of the poo of the poo is nitrates, the nitrogens. You know how it's gone now. Definitely in South Australia, South Australia was a dry. So dog poo would go this white powdery stuff. So I do, and the white powdery stuff is apparently really rich in nitrates from the bacteria fixing the nitrogen from the poo. So poo itself is not the origin of the nitrates. It's the bacteria operating on the poo which makes it. So that's one thing I'm going to look up. So note to me to look up the origin of sodium carbonate and how that fitted into the entire story of making gunpowder. Just can't understand it. And also to note, to really look in deep, to truly, truly understand how poo, urine, gives nitrates. You know, what is going on there? Because if you look around the human body, there's nitrogen. Nitrogen's stuck to carbons. It might occasionally be stuck to an oxygen, but very rarely. Most of it's stuck to other carbons. So how does it actually stick to an oxygen? So that's a really important thing to get. So I suppose the only thing we have to say at the moment is that the majority of nitrogen fixed moment, that we the majority of nitrogen is what we need for protein, means the fertilizer we need to fix, done by chemical processes. So coming out of World War One, they had the Haber process. So majority of nitrogen is made by the Haber process. It's getting hydrogen and nitrogen and heating it up and harvesting the nitrogen, the ammonium out of it. And I think it's a surprising amount of the world's energy. I think 2% of the world's energy is gone into making fertilizer, which makes all our food. We are living off the periodic table, and we're living on chemical processes. And so most of your food that you eat, the nitrogen has been fixed in there, has not been by this crop rotation and this beautiful things, all the technologies which led Europe to boom and increased the productivity of the land in Europe. It's now the productivity is based on chemical processes, people getting a huge amount of nitrogen, a huge amount of hydrogen, ramming it together, heating it up, and harvesting the ammonium, making ammonium nitrate fertilizers. It's just a pretty amazing, amazing thing. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.